Hey, it's Lisa. Vacation, Lisa, specifically. Listen, I'm trying something a little bit different today. You may have seen that officially, The Lisa Show is on break. My team and I sprint for most of the year to create episodes that we hope you'll listen to and love. But twice a year, when we've filled up our whiteboards, drained our caffeine supply, and stretched our deadlines absolutely as far as they go before we all snap, it's time for a little break. Now, normally, we just disappear, stop posting, and crawl under our desks for a few weeks. I'm kidding. It's actually mostly meetings where we look at your feedback and try to make sure that whatever we make next is the stuff you really want and need. But this year, I wanted to do more. Over the years that I've been doing this show, there are some episodes that have really changed me, and you've told me about episodes which mean the most to you. But I've never gone back into our archives after publishing an episode. It's an old habit from my radio days. You just keep plugging. You keep going. Don't stop. Meanwhile, I genuinely think that some of these are worth revisiting. So as long as we have to take a break anyway, and my producers are adamant that we must, I've curated a small collection of your and my favorites. I'll give a little bit more behind the scenes before we start, and we can take this trip down memory lane together. So please pull up a piña colada and let me reintroduce you to Rachel Hunt in our episode, Tiny Kindness and Giving People Their Flowers Now. First of all, I figure as long as this is a revisited episode, I'm allowed to give spoilers. This episode starts off by defining collective memory. I won't get too deep into it right here because we explain it almost immediately. But this phenomenon stuck with my team for months. And it's so cool because whoever I've talked to about this episode has experienced the same thing. Collective memory, in the context that we're using it here, is contagious storytelling. Not only does focusing on the tender, quiet, often unseen moments of human goodness short-circuit anxiety and literally change the way you think and feel about the world, when you talk about it out loud, you can do the same thing for other people. It passively unlocks their positive memories and feelings. I absolutely loved talking to Rachel about this, and it floored me how over the following weeks after we released this episode, I had so many more stories boomerang back to me as the people who touched this episode and listened to it experienced this incredible shared experience of collective memory. As you listen, you will find yourself thinking of your own story, of someone who did something extraordinary that gave you relief or a little bit of love in a moment you needed it.
I don't know how I will get through this grief. Like, I didn't know how I'd get through the depression I felt, the grief I was feeling. It literally was an act of survival to do something consciously to look for goodness and kindness as a very intentional reminder that it was there. And then it did, I got through it.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. This is The Lisa Show. I need to tell you about something that's going to happen to you when you hear today's guest speak. It happened to me, and it's happened to every other person on my team who worked on this episode. Rachel Hunt is a professor and poet, and she also collects stories about kindness. Her project, Tiny Kindness, started as a way to personally cope with grief and see the good in the world. But since then, it's grown into something that is, in my opinion, anything but tiny. And as Rachel shared the story with me, she introduced me to a fascinating side effect of telling and sharing little stories about kindness. And this side effect is what I'm referring to when I say that something's going to happen to you before this episode is over. It's called collective memory.
One of my favorite books was a philosophy of memory book, and it introduced the idea that the Greeks have two words for memory. One of the words for memory was like when you're driving down the street and you see a sign and then memory pops in your mind where you weren't trying to remember. But the other kind is when you're sitting with friends, even like this, like, hey, Lisa, remember when I met you in a bathroom? And then both of us remember. So it's that collective memory we do together where it's like a little bit more intentional. And then the theory is that that type of memory that we do with family or friends or groups is what binds us together.
Collective memory. This is the coolest thing. Like Rachel said, some of this is shared memories. You've probably caught that Rachel and I met in a bathroom. That's a true story. It's very us. Just talking about it brought me right back.
I keep thinking about that moment because I was like, I know that's Lisa, but I still said like very awkwardly, are you Lisa? And then told you who I was. And like, I think we hugged then too.
I know we hugged. I remember because I'm obsessed with lipstick and things like that, that you had like a dark color on. And I was like, we're going to be friends.
Thanks. I love it.
Anyway, talking about it with Rachel brings back details I probably wouldn't have remembered otherwise. That's the beauty of collective memory. But the other part of collective memory is something that happens involuntarily when you hear someone else's story. Even though it's not a memory you share, hearing theirs brings back something for you. It happens all the time on the Council of Moms. I share what my teenager said to me recently, and someone else knows exactly what that's like and has a story to share about their own teenager. That's collective memory too. And this is what's going to happen when you hear some of these stories about tiny kindnesses. Let's rewind to the beginning so I can formally introduce you to my friend, Rachel Hunt.
Hi, everyone. I'm Rachel Hunt. I'm so happy to be here. I am the founder and curator of a social media project called Tiny Kindness. I ask people to send in tiny stories of literally tiny kindnesses, which I describe as when someone does something for you that's really little, that maybe wasn't a big deal to the person who did it for you, but you will never forget it. And then I get to share those and amplify those like bits of good news with many, many people.
So I should say Tiny Kindness, when I saw it on Instagram, my first thought was, what a great idea. We should all be doing this. Will you take me back to that moment that you decided to start Tiny Kindness and tell me why and what was surrounding your life during that time?
Yeah, and this is a part I might cry, but it's okay to cry with friends.
100%, especially with Lisa, who cries a lot.
So Lisa, when I met you in the bathroom watching the movie premiere, literally right after that, I left the premiere and got on a plane to go to China. And I don't think it was the first time that I moved to China, but when I moved there, 9 days later, I found out my brother passed away from an overdose. And I was not okay, as you can imagine, and I was really far from family. And I wasn't sleeping because I like flew across the country, flew back to the U.S. for the funeral, flew back. But I was writing a poetry book that I ended up finishing in the middle of the night. But 1 year later, I went back to the U.S., gave birth that summer, came back to China the exact month, exact anniversaries before.
Oh, wow.
I very much felt that book, The Body Keeps the Score. But this time I didn't have a poetry book to get through. So once again, I'm up in the middle of the night all by myself with the baby as the rest of the family is sleeping. And I was like, I have to find something for me to survive. And I had had the idea years before because my sister's child, when they were 10, I was at their house when I was sick and I just had a sore throat. And I didn't even know that the child was like in the kitchen making me tea, but they had never done it before. So they cut open the little packet of the mint tea and like poured it in straight with the leaves, but like added honey and did their very best. And I took a sip and it was so gross. But I still was like, oh my gosh, this is the nicest thing anyone has ever done for me. So I've kind of like held on to that story of if I have a story that's actually so tiny, but made me feel loved and supported, maybe other people have stories like this. So then now, that was like years before, but now I'm in China, awake in the middle of the nights, mourning my brother, taking care of a new baby, feeling very alone. So I'm like, this is the time to start the project. So I literally just put out a call, described the stories I just shared, and then I was flooded with responses.
I remember when it first started, there were so many posts right from the get-go. Were you surprised by the initial response?
Yes, I had no idea because I was confident other people might, but I never talked to someone in person to say, hey, by the way, do you have any of these stories that are little but mean something to you? I never had a single conversation with someone checking my theory that maybe people did. So I was surprised. And it was, at first, a lot of people I knew. And I remember the first time I got a post-submission from someone I didn't know that was a stranger. And I'm like, oh my gosh, someone who doesn't know me, who doesn't have that built-in trust, like they trusted me to share this special story. There was a lot of growth at the beginning. Thousands of people reading these stories and sending in stories. And then also telling me that their lives were being changed by it. And I could believe them because my life was also being changed by reading these stories and looking for these stories. And it did change the way that I existed in the world.
Rachel's tiny passion project, which started as a way to comfort herself in a moment of loss, set off a chain reaction of collective memory. As she shared tiny examples of kindness, her inbox and comment sections began to fill with people saying, "I know this feeling. Something just like this happened to me."
And one example, someone talked about how in a winter storm in Boston, the bus driver drove them to their door. The public bus driver who has a route, who has a schedule in this winter storm, they were the last passenger on the bus and he took them all the way to their house. And the bus driver didn't know the person had just moved to Boston and also was feeling lonely. But so it was like kindness on top of kindness where she felt supported in this new town. And then I had no idea a bus driver would ever do this, but someone in the comments is like, oh my gosh, that happened to me once too. And that felt like it's generative. Like these stories of kindness are generative because they help us remember our own stories and they help us see them in real life. I also think about the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon or the frequency illusion. The best ways of explaining it are when I lived in Connecticut, I bought a used Subaru Forester. It was a gold color. It was really old even when I bought it. It was in 1999 or something. I never once noticed this car anywhere. After I bought it, every single time I drove to Costco, I would see five. Every time, the exact color, the exact make. So it's like once you have reason to notice something, you literally see it everywhere. And I'm like, oh, this theory applies to kindness. Like when you're looking for it, when you have reason to notice, you literally notice them all the time.
You may remember us talking about something similar just a few episodes ago, how when you're looking for something or even just aware of it, it starts to pop up all around you. And while what you focus on may not change your reality, it can absolutely change the way you perceive reality, the experience you have of your own life. And I love this because as Rachel explained, these tiny kindnesses do not occur in a vacuum.
So many of the stories I receive are stories that can't be fixed. So many are about miscarriages or stillbirths or divorce or death or job loss, just thing after thing that's a human experience. And a tiny kindness cannot change a miscarriage. It can't bring that baby back. It can't bring my dead brother back. It can't save a marriage. But what it can do is it can make you feel supported and seen through that experience. And in the end, that actually changes everything. A lot of my favorite stories are like that. One of the first I received was a woman who was after the first year of her divorce. Her 8-year-old child remembered that the dad used to buy her a birthday cake. So he found this list from his school of all the family's phone numbers. He calls his best friend's mom and asked her to get a cake, which is also a double kindness because the mom does it. So she delivers this cake on the woman's birthday the year after her divorce. And the son who asked for this gift gives the other mom $2.47, which was all the money he had in the world. That didn't change that she's divorced. It didn't change this thing that happened to her family, but she will never forget that her child did this for her.
She'll never forget that.
And then another of my favorite stories happened in Japan, which for me, I also always ask like where they took place because I'm kind of trying to track that they're actually everywhere. But one was in Japan. It was a brand new mom. She has a 6-month-old baby, her first baby. She lives in Tokyo and she's trying to get to this doctor's appointment, but she's lost and it's raining. It's pouring rain. She doesn't have an umbrella. She has her baby strapped to her chest. And all of a sudden she crosses a street and the rain stops. At first, it takes her seconds to realize what happened. There's an old Japanese man, she described with a hunched over back, holding an umbrella over her and her girl. And he walked her all the way to her stops while his like suit got soaked. And she wrote me, she described this and said, "I'll never forget the feeling of being seen and loved in that way." But she told me later that she had postpartum depression and someone seeing her actually meant everything. Like this also saved her. So I feel like there's so many things like that. And I've literally been able to share thousands of stories like this.
It's so interesting that you talked about collective memory before, because with each one of these stories, it's bringing, I'm getting emotional because I'm thinking of when I lived overseas and the kindnesses that people showed me that maybe I haven't thought about for a really long time. It's very powerful.
Yeah. When I was prepping to have this chat with you, I already told Lisa this, but I listened to like every single episode from her last series run, like on Doing Good Better. So, so fun to listen to those. Like they are so great. I love them so much. And I remember that you kind of talked in one, I don't even remember which episode, you talked about some of the kindnesses people do for you that were like the traditional kind of like maybe dropping off food, but they also didn't know what to do more, or they wanted to be helpful, but like some of them weren't actually that helpful. And you weren't trying to say this in an ungrateful way. But one of the things I thought about then of the collective memory is that I also somehow had the idea to ask for the stories from the receiver rather than the person who gave the kindness.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, oh, this person went through divorce and I did this nice thing for them and like pat me on the back.
Great idea.
Yes. Because we actually don't know what means a lot to someone. And sometimes it is a casserole and sometimes it is showing up at someone's door, but sometimes it's an umbrella held over our head. And I had an instance because I do kind of feel that like reading stories of kindness does help us know how to be kind to other people. So when I was still in China, my next door neighbor broke her arm and she also happened to be the principal of my children's kindergarten. So we were good friends. I'm at her house like the week that she broke her arm at her job. And I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, how can I offer kindness to her? So I'm like, oh, Tammy, let me do your dishes. And then she's like, oh yeah, Randy will really appreciate that. And I did not know that their whole marriage, they had a deal that like she did all the cooking and her husband did all of the dishes. So where I think I'm like being so magnanimous, like you have a broken arm, it will be really hard to do the dishes. Let me offer this to you. It did not change her life at all. The dishes were going to be done without my help. I did do them because I offered, but I just thought it was the funniest thing. And I'm like, oh yes, we actually just don't know what matters to people.
I think everyone probably has a story like this, and probably more than we're aware of. In trying to be kind, we may not always hit the nail on the head, but it's cool to look at the wide range of stories from people on the receiving end and see that little things meant so much. The umbrella story wasn't so much about rain as it was about a stranger going out of their way to help their neighbor, even just to spare them a little discomfort. Similarly, the effect we were just talking about, where thinking about kindness makes you see it more and experience the world as a kinder place, for Rachel, the impact of these tiny stories was enormous.
I started the project literally as a survival mechanism for myself because I'm like, I don't know how I will get through this grief. I didn't know how I'd get through the depression I felt, the grief I was feeling. It literally was an act of survival to do something consciously to look for goodness and kindness as a very intentional reminder that it was there. And also it made me busy because it took time to curate this and to edit them and to read through these hundreds of submissions, especially at first when they literally were pouring in. So every Sunday I would take a break from my children and I would go find a quiet room on the campus we lived. And I would just read them by myself and just sob as I was reading through them. And sometimes students would be like studying and I'm like, please don't look at me. I'm a professor here, but it was a very moving thing. And then like it did, like I got through it.
I appreciate that Rachel admitted she needed to feel the grief and consciously look for goodness and kindness, and that was healing for her. I felt like she curated her own experience with grief instead of feeling captive to it. And part of that was the helpful, touching stories of tiny kindnesses. And this is where collective memory came in. For someone in Rachel's shoes, it was a survival tool. It was hard evidence of the good in life at a time when she desperately needed it. And it's beautiful to me that the power of these little acts can keep rippling outward like this. Meanwhile, the people on the giving side may not even remember them. Kindness can happen in a moment. But when we remember together, tiny kindnesses can have an even greater impact.
Like there's so many stories like this. Someone even had a really cute one of, I do not know the words because I'm not a craft person in this way, but they had a thing of yarn. What is it called when it's like a ball? Is it literally called a ball of yarn?
I call it a ball of yarn.
I'm so sorry. I don't know the real words.
Sorry.
They're like a knitter.
My sister
or like,
Gina is so
yes,
rolling
so I don't
her
even
eyes
know
right
like
now.
The words for like.
And for sure, knitting and crocheting are two different
yes,
things.
Yes, and
I've been reprimanded
that's why I'm nervous.
Yes,
yeah,
I know.
That's what I'm nervous
okay.
to say.
We're on the same crafting level.
But she had a ball of yarn and as the plane took off, it was under her, or like it rolled. She's like, oh my gosh. So this like thing rolled. It's like a cute one. It wasn't even like my baby's crying and I need help. It wasn't even that level. It was just her yarn was unraveling. And it was a series of many people passing it back to her and like rolling it up. And she said it made her whole flight. And she just felt so happy of this collective kindness.
I'd be willing to bet that most of the people in this story probably don't remember or think about this, which I find very interesting because it doesn't mean it didn't have an impact. I mean, I'm talking about it now, and more importantly, the person on the receiving end remembers, and now I will too. And also, since now I have the luxury of looking it up, let me just apologize to the crafters in our community. The word we were looking for was skein, skein of yarn. Details matter, whether in crafting or in the story itself. Okay, so now we'll never forget.
I want to share at least one more story.
Yeah.
A lot of what I've shared is about how a lot of the tiny kindnesses really do happen after a hard life moment, like so many of the stories I receive. But I also like the stories that are literally just little. I think of them as joy on joy or even just neutral. One of my favorite stories was sent in really early, and it was a mom was on the New York subway. It's a normal day for her. She's with her five-year-old child. As her five-year-old child eats a banana on the subway, and as the children do, literally just handed the gross, slimy peel to the mom.
Yeah.
So the mom is just holding this banana peel and would have for the duration of their 40-minute ride or hour ride to their house. And then a young man that I think was like 20 years old has an earlier stop, notices mom holding this gross banana peel, doesn't say a word to this person, takes the banana peel out of her hand, and she watches him as he gets off the subway onto the platform and just throws it in the trash.
I love that.
I love it so much.
That.
It's like literally one of my top three favorite stories because I like the ones that make me cry, like the one I shared about the mom and the birthday cake and the child. But this is also, for me, the epitome of what I'm trying to talk about, of literally so tiny. And this mom has never forgotten this story. This 20-year-old New Yorker saw her and did the tiniest thing that wasn't hard for him to do, but it did make her life a little bit better for that 40-minute ride, so she's not holding this gross banana peel. But even more than that, she felt seen. So I just love it.
Yeah, the different, like the variety.
One of my favorite poems is by Joy Sullivan, and one of the lines is, "There's a million ways to say I love you." And I think another is, "Eat your vegetables or something," or like, "Get your sleep." But I just think about, there's a million ways to show kindness. Like, I had no idea before that someone could show kindness by throwing away a banana peel, but now I know. Or holding an umbrella, but now I know.
Once you know how many different ways there are to show kindness, it's easier to spot opportunities. But sometimes you don't even need an opportunity because kindness is universal. It happens everywhere. It really isn't particular to one kind of person or place. But if you're suspicious of that or haven't thought about it in an abundant way, it may be because, like most things, looking for and being kind takes practice. Rachel told me that she's been inspired by this idea that kindness takes practice and shared an example of something that anyone can do at any time.
One woman wrote me recently, actually on Tiny Kindness, and she's like, "Oh my gosh, I didn't know you're the woman who wrote Mother's Milk, this poetry book." And she said, "I read it every Mother's Day as my gift to myself." And that was a huge kindness for me. I'm not even writing very much right now, so it's not even where my energy is going. But these people still telling me that my work mattered to them, that matters to me. I still have depression. I still have these daily battles where I really do consciously still have to try to look for hope or goodness. But I don't doubt that my life has mattered to people. And I don't doubt that the work that I've done when I've been on the earth has made a difference, literally for the good, because people tell me. So that's a very, very specific example. But I think that telling people, there's even the phrase, it's kind of cheesy, but I've been hearing it lately, of give people their flowers now. And the idea is that don't wait till someone's dead to say nice things about them. It can be small to tell someone like, "Hey, you matter to me." And it can feel maybe cheesy, especially if it's not someone you have a relationship with where you tell them you love them, but you can write it in a quick note, even to say, "I'm thinking of you," or even just to share a memory and say, "Oh, I was just thinking about this specific time."
Get into the practice of telling people how their work mattered or impacted
or
you,
even
or even just
like,
their friendship,
yes.
or they're just their being, or you observed something, any way that they've changed their life, and you think, "Oh, that's dumb, that's small, that's embarrassing," but no, it's not. Like, it could really have a big effect. The expression that Rachel used, "give people their flowers now," has stuck with me. I think that metaphor is just so beautiful and applies to every part of this conversation. You find what you're looking for. Rachel's way of giving people flowers, acknowledging their strengths, telling them you love them, telling them you're thinking about them, or other ways to recognize kindness, like sharing a memory, are all ways to practice. And sincerely, I don't think any of these practices are tiny. The memories I've had putting this podcast together have left a big impression on me. They've changed my life. So I don't want to minimize their impact. But what I do want to do instead is be more intentional about how I practice kindness. By doing this, just listening to this episode, you've thought enough about tiny kindnesses that you're going to see them more often. If you've experienced collective memory as you've listened, please keep it going by sharing the tiny kindnesses from your life. It magnifies their impact and helps us all to see the good in the world we live in. That's something that's going to stick around with me about this conversation. The more we talk about kindness, the more I recognize kindness in my life and opportunities I have to be kind in tiny ways today. When you look for people giving flowers, you realize that there was a bouquet of kindness in your hand all along.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley, with help from Blake Morse, with post-production by Kit Merrill. For more information on our guest, Rachel Hunt, links to her work will be in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including the Council of Moms, filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all. And thanks for listening.
Do you find yourself avoiding the news because of how depressive and divisive it all seems, but still want to stay informed? You are not alone. Top of Mind, a BYU Radio original podcast, understands how polarizing these conversations can be and wants to help you engage in the challenge while seeking understanding. With the goal of developing empathy for others, Top of Mind helps you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things that you care about, and challenges your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen and a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.